The Medical Aid in Dying Act is still in committee in both houses. The bill, which is sponsored by Senator Dianne Savino and Assemblymember Amy Paulin, would allow a patient who meets several criteria to take life-ending medication. That criteria includes the following. First, a person must be of sound mind to make the decision as verified by two physicians and have a condition that will kill the patient within 6 months. The patient must also be over 18 and able to administer the medications his or herself. Now, last month, the governor said he would sign the Medical Aid in Dying Act, boosting the hopes of proponents. But on Monday, he said the bill was, quote, a bridge too far for this legislative session. Nevertheless, advocates are still hopeful. Today, though, we're joined by two critics of this bill. Kristen Hansen is the community relations advocate at the Patients' Rights Action Fund. She's also the widow of J.J. Hansen, who's appeared on this program. J.J. passed away from glioblastoma. He was a staunch opponent to assisted suicide as he battled his illness, and Kristen now continues his work, and we're going to learn about why he was so adamant that this was not the way to go in just a minute. We're also joined by Stephanie Woodward, who's the Director of Advocacy at the Center for Disability Rights. Stephanie is a proud disabled person and a member of ADAPT, which is a national grassroots community that organizes to assure the civil and human rights of people with disabilities to live in freedom. So, Kristen and Stephanie, welcome. It's good to see you both.
Thank you.
So, remind us why Kristen, JJ was so against this, because he had good reason to be.
Yes. So, JJ was diagnosed with terminal brain cancer back in 2014. And having gone through that experience, we saw firsthand that doctors make mistakes. JJ's doctors first told him that he only had 4 months left to live. We had three different doctors that told us there was nothing we could do, that we should just go home and enjoy the time that we had left. Thankfully, we didn't give up hope. We went and we got fourth and fifth opinions. JJ responded well to treatment. He did a clinical trial. He ended up going into remission. And we had 3.5 good years with JJ before he ended up passing away in December of 2017. During that time, our son was able to create priceless memories with JJ, and we actually welcomed a second son into the world.
Okay, so there was a lot of life there.
There was.
At the end, and if he had taken that medicine, you would not have had a second son.
And that was the thing. JJ had realized that if he had had those medications with him during his fifth month of treatment, when he was struggling physically from the effects of the treatment, he might have taken those medications because he became depressed. And he said that you can't undo that. There's no requirement in the bills for a doctor to follow up with you once you actually receive the medication. And he thought that was very, very dangerous for patients like him who can experience depression at any point following their diagnosis.
Sure. Now, Stephanie, you also have some other criticisms of this bill.
Yeah, there are no safeguards in this bill that could ever be created to ensure that disabled and elderly and ill people don't experience coercion or abuse in order to have access to assisted suicide and eventually be killed against their will.
All right. So now the sponsors of the bill have been on this program saying that there are, that first of all, you have to be of sound mind, and that has to be underscored by two separate physicians, and the person needs to have a life-ending illness, you know, this like esophageal cancer. And only have 6 months to live.
6 months to live with or without treatment. So that means your standard run-of-the-mill diabetic is also eligible. I'm a woman with a disability, but I have kidney function issues if I stop taking my kidney medicine.
Do you really think two doctors would give you the okay to take this medicine simply because of kidney issues?
We've seen doctors fight in the courts when assisted suicide hasn't been legal to allow a woman with CP to have access to kill herself.
CP...
cerebral palsy, which is not at all a terminal diagnosis. So yes, we have seen in many cases, doctors have gone to court to try to fight for the rights of their patients to die, despite the fact that they do not have terminal illnesses.
So what we have here then is sort of a confluence of several factors, that if you are a person who living with disabilities, who also might be depressed, and you might also have bad actors in your life, bad things could happen.
Absolutely. Disability is often seen as something that's not worth living. So doctors, if you cannot cure us, the next step is to get rid of us.
So this is a difficult question for me to ask, but I'm going to ask it. It sounds like you're saying that people who need this medication should suffer just in case there are bad actors out there who no longer want to care for their loved ones who might have disabilities?
No, actually, when we talk about the word suffer, a lot of people think about pain, and we're in no way want to put anyone through pain. There's plenty of medication out there to help people alleviate their pain. And in fact, when you look at the top five reasons in Oregon why people are choosing assisted suicide, not a single one of the top five reasons include pain. They all include disability factors.
All right. So disability factors, meaning like...
Such as loss of autonomy. Feeling like
I have
a burden.
To have somebody take me to the bathroom, and I don't feel like I have shame and things like that.
Yeah, so feeling like a burden on other people. It is absolutely terrifying to live in a country where we would say it's okay to want to kill yourself because you feel like a burden to somebody else, rather than trying to ensure that people with disabilities, elderly and ill people, don't feel like a burden on other people.
So the depression issue is not as high up on the priority list for you as it is for you, Kristen.
It was a great concern for us because we saw that JJ, fear of being a burden and depression went hand in hand. When he was feeling depressed, that was his biggest concern. He was worried about us, even though we were doing everything to help him feel like his life had value, no matter what his condition was.
And depression for you, not as much?
I think depression is a very important factor, and many disabled people do experience depression. And the fact that you don't have to be evaluated by any sort of psychological review to ensure that you are not depressed. A general practitioner cannot tell you if you are experiencing depression. And yet that is not something that is required by this.
You've said that there's nothing in this that they could even put in this bill that would make it workable for you.
Right. People with disabilities are being murdered every day, and it's illegal to do that now, and people are getting away with it. So if we're creating another path for people to die, how are we protecting lives?
And you agree with that?
What we've seen is that when you allow suicide to become a medical treatment, it often becomes that the economically disadvantaged and the disabled, this becomes the only treatment to which they have equal access. We see all kinds of healthcare disparities right now in our current healthcare system, and this is a very, very dangerous thing to add to the mix.
You know, you say, though, that in Oregon, the pain is not at the top of the list of the people who have, you know, as someone who's seen people in pain when they're dying, I find that really hard to believe.
Well, you know, I think that New York has a lot of room for improvement. We rank at the very bottom when it comes to hospice utilization. We're 47th in the nation, and we have the second lowest number of providers to beneficiaries. So we can do a lot to improve access to multidisciplinary care like hospice and palliative care at the end of life.
Which is so critical.
So critical for easing people into the end of life. I walk that with JJ, and we had a hard time getting in-home hospice services where we live in New York. We live in rural New York, and we were only able to get a few hours a week. It wasn't enough. We need to improve
that. So instead of this medical aid and dying, improve hospice. What would you do?
I would improve community-based services for people with disabilities and elderly population.
In what way?
In ensuring people can receive attendant services in their own homes rather than being forced into nursing facilities. People say they'd rather die than go to a nursing home, and they mean that. So when we are creating systems in New York that is forcing people into nursing homes, then people automatically start becoming depressed and feel like suicide is their only option because they're being warehoused away.
And you're not, right, and you're not in your own home, and some of the nursing homes are so poorly run.
And abusive.
So we're out of time, but is there anything else that you'd like to add?
This afternoon at 2:00, we're having a press conference with several of the disability rights organizations. Almost all of the national disability rights organizations oppose the legalization of assisted suicide.
Kristen Hansen is a community relations advocate at the Patients' Rights Action Fund. Stephanie Woodward is the director of advocacy at the Center for Disability Rights and a member of ADAPT. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by the New York State AFL-CIO. 2.5 million members speaking with one voice to ensure a better life for working men and women. Information at nysaflcio.org.